Cassette number 13, side 1, a treatise on cosmic fire, continuing section 2, division C, the egoic ray and solar fire, on page 546. Here I would point out that there is a slight difference in the case of the mental unit, for the four spirillae of the mental unit are aroused to full activity when the knowledge petal of the final three opens. The opening of the remaining two reveal the glowing threefold flower which lies at the center of egoic manifestation. It would be wise to sound a note of warning here in connection with this question of egoic unfoldment. What has been said here has been but the formulation of the general plan of egoic unfoldment as interpreted in terms of consciousness or of fire. In studying the subject with due personal application, the student should bear in mind the following facts. First, that according to the ray of the monad, so will the petals unfold. For instance, if the ray of the monad is the second ray, the knowledge petal will be the first to open. But the second petal of love will almost parallel its development, being for that particular type of ego the line of easiest unfoldment. The knowledge petal will be for it the most difficult to open. Second, that the effects of one circle of petals opening will be felt within the next circle at an early stage and will cause a vibratory response, hence the greater rapidity of the later stages of unfoldment as compared with the first. Third, that there exist many cases of uneven or unequal unfoldment. Quite frequently, people are found with perhaps two petals unfolded in the first circle and one still in latency, while a petal within the central or second ring may be in full development. This is the explanation frequently of the power in service along certain lines displayed by some, coupled with a comparatively low stage of development or of consciousness, egoically speaking. Page 547. This is due to varying causes, such as the karma of the monad itself on its high plane and the strength of the monadic grip upon the ego. Many lives given to a particular line of action, resulting in the setting up of a strong vibration, one so strong that it renders the development of response to subsidiary vibrations difficult of attainment. Certain peculiar conditions hidden in the evolution of any particular lord of a ray and the effect of that condition upon a particular group of cells, the group karma of a collection or congeries of causal bodies and their mutual interplay. Every egoic unit or monadic force center has a definite effect upon the group or community of egos in which it may have a place, and as the interaction proceeds, results are sometimes produced of a temporarily unexpected nature. These points should be carefully borne in mind by the student of egoic evolution. This whole subject is of interest in that it is the next step ahead for the students of occult psychology. Much will be eventually ascertained which will throw new light upon the possibility of work upon the physical plane for man. The whole secret of success in any endeavor or enterprise is primarily based on two things. First, the ability of the ego to work through the personality, using it simply as the medium of expression. Second, the karma of the egoic group as it becomes more apparent on the physical plane. Hitherto, much has been said and taught about individual karma. Group karma in the future will slowly assume its rightful place in the thought of students, and this will lead to more intelligent cooperation, to a more sympathetic understanding of group responsibilities, and to a more adequate solution of group problems. Page 548. The study of occult psychology involves a true conception of the nature of the ego, or the arousing of the ego to full activity in manifestation. It will necessitate the sound formulation of the laws of egoic unfoldment, of the methods whereby petal by petal the lotus may be brought to perfection, and of the triple nature of its evolution. It will bring about an eventual apprehension of the true meaning of force and of energy in its dual aspect, internal vibration and external radiation. It will produce the centering of the attention of all advanced students upon the centers, in this case not the physical centers on etheric levels, but upon the psychical centers, such as the ego in the causal body and egoic groups. This will produce later a better comprehension of the effect of one consciousness upon another consciousness on the physical plane, and this knowledge will be scientifically utilized to produce specific results in group evolution, and thus some of the world problems will find solution. Finally, the laws of fire will be studied. The nature of heat, of radiation, and of flame will be occultly investigated, and the action of one fire upon another fire, the result of radiation from one conscious sphere to another, will be realized. The method of arousing consciousness on the different planes by action upon the fires of the causal body and their stimulation will be gradually revealed. The whole question is slowly, very slowly, coming to the fore in human thought, even though this is little realized, through the study of vocational education, business efficiency, and the place of the human unit in any trade or enterprise. Men are being spoken of and considered in terms of potential force factors, and this is a step in the right direction. Approaching the same question from the personality standpoint and not the egoic, the time is fast approaching when the emphasis will be laid in education upon how best the young can be taught to contact their own ego or higher energy. Page 549. How best they can be led to appropriate the knowledge and ability of their higher self for use on the physical plane, how best they can ascertain their group formation and thus work along with their group and in unison with the total energy of that group, how best their threefold lower self, physical, astral, and mental, can be brought into direct alignment with their higher center of force and thus draw down a continuous supply of energy for the strengthening of their three vehicles and their wise manipulation, how best the various spirillae can be awakened and the energy within their own cells released for action. All this will be a thing of gradual evolution, but I have here outlined the trend of the future study as in the formulation of possibility lies its eventual realization. Such a process must necessarily be slow. The powers of the ego are stupendous, and if released now through the agency of an unready personality, would lead to dire disaster. But the time will come, and in the meantime, a due apprehension of inherent capacity will profit all who have the intuition to recognize the goal. Page 550. Section 2, Division D, Thought Elementals and Fire Elementals. Roman numeral 1, Thought Forms. 1, Their function. A, to respond to vibration. B, to provide the vehicle for an idea. C, to carry out specific purpose. 2, the laws of thought. A, 3 cosmic laws. B, 7 systemic laws. Roman numeral 2, thought elementals and devas. 1, the ruler of fire, Agni. A, Agni and the solar logos. B, Agni and the mental plane. C, Agni and the three fires. 2, the fire devas, the greater builders. A, introductory statements. B, the functions of the devas. C, the devas and the planes. 3, the solar angels, the Agnishvatas. Introductory remarks. A, on the fifth principle. B, on individualization. C, on incarnation. D, on the building of the causal body. 4, the fire elementals, the lesser builders. A, introductory. B, physical plane elementals. C, elementals of the ethers. D, elementals and the microcosm. Page 551. Roman numeral 3, man as a creator in mental matter. 1, the creation of thought forms. 2, the process of thought form building. Roman numeral 4, man and the fire spirits. 1, the will aspect and creation. A, the condition of the magician. B, construction of thought forms. C, the occult significance of speech. 2, the nature of magic. A, black magicians and white. B, the source of black magic. C, conditions for white magic. 3, 15 rules for magic. A, 6 rules for the mental plane. B, 5 rules for the astral plane. C, 4 rules for the physical plane. Under this division, we shall briefly give an outline of the study which we will undertake upon this vast and stupendous subject, for, as it definitely concerns the evolution of man and his power eventually to create, it will be wise for us to take up the matter in some detail. This section is not intended to give interesting bits of information anent the devas. I only seek to deal with the matter in its practical application to man, and to give as much of the necessary knowledge as will enable a man to control and build his own system, to understand the method of creation, and to comprehend somewhat the lesser lives and the paralleling deva evolution with which he may be concerned. Roman numeral 1, thought forms. 1. Their function. It will be noted that in studying this matter, we have not started with that which is most apparent, the exoteric form in mental matter, but with the inner life or idea within the form, and with the laws that govern the creative aspect. Page 552. This function of every thought form is threefold: to respond to vibration, to provide a body for an idea, to carry out specific purpose. Let us first study the logoic thought form and then turn our attention to the thought forms fabricated by the thinker from the systemic mental planes and in mental matter. We have to note that in the case of the logos, all upon which we have to base our conclusions are his physical manifestation and his quality, psychic nature, aroma, emanation or magnetism, as we see it working out through the form. Hence we are very much handicapped. A. Response to vibration. It is always recognized in occult circles that the whole object of human evolution is to enable the thinker to respond to every contact fully and consciously, and thus to utilize his material sheath or sheaths as adequate transmitter of such contact. The most easily studied human thought form is the one the ego creates through which to function. He builds his sheaths by the power of thought, and the dense physical body is the best sheath that, at any particular stage of evolution, he can, at the time, manufacture. The same can be predicated of the solar logos. He builds, by the power of thought, a body which can respond to that group of vibrations which are concerned with the cosmic physical plane, the only one we can study. It is not yet adequate and does not fully express the logoic thinker. The vibrations to which the systemic thought form must respond are many in number, but for our purposes might be enumerated as mainly 7. 1. The vibrations of the cosmic physical plane, viewing it as all the matter of that plane which exists outside the logoic ring pass knot. It concerns the pranic and akashic fluids and currents. Page 553. 2. The vibrations of the cosmic astral plane as they affect the physical form of divine manifestation. This involves cosmically the action upon our solar logos of the emotional quality of other cosmic entities and concerns the magnetic effect upon him of their psychic emanation. This, in view of the fact that his dense physical body is not a principle, is of a more potent nature than the first set of vibrations, as is the case also in man's evolution. 3. Vibrations from that which, within the logoic consciousness, is recognized as the logoic higher self, or his emanating source. This brings the solar system within the vibratory radius of certain constellations, which have a position of profound importance in the general evolution of the system. 4. Vibrations from Sirius via the cosmic mental plane. 5. Vibrations from the 7 rishis of the Great Bear, and primarily from those 2 who are the prototypes of the lords of the 7th and 5th rays. This is a most important point and finds its microcosmic correspondence in the place which the 7th ray has in the building of a thought form, and the use of the 5th ray in the work of concretion. All magicians who work with matter and who are occupied with form building, either consciously or unconsciously, call in these 2 types of force or energy. 6. Certain very remote vibrations, as yet no more appreciable in the logoic body than is monadic influence in that of average man, from the one about whom naught may be said, that cosmic existence who is expressing himself through seven centers of force, of which our solar system is one. Page 554. 7. A series of vibrations which will become more potent as our Logos nears that period which is occultly called divine maturity, which emanate from that constellation in the heavens which embodies his polar opposite. This is a deep mystery and concerns the cosmic marriage of the Logos. It will be apparent, therefore, how little can as yet be predicated anent the future of the solar system until the vibrations of the sixth and seventh order become more powerful, and their effects can consequently be studied more easily. It is not possible here to do more than indicate the seven types of vibrations to which our solar Logos, functioning in a material body, will in due course of time consciously and fully respond. He responds to vibrations of the first, second, third, and fourth order quite fully at this time, but as yet, though responding, cannot fully and consciously utilize these types of energy. The vibration of the fifth order is recognized by him, particularly in three of his centers, but is not as yet fully under his control. The other two are sensed and felt, but so remotely as to be almost outside the range of his consciousness. In carrying out these ideas in connection with man and the thought forms which he fabricates, such as his material sheaths, the correspondence can be worked out within the system and from the point of view of the planetary schemes in which man has his place. The work of man, as he builds in mental thought matter and constructs forms extraneous to himself, we shall deal with later. The methods whereby vibratory response is brought about might be enumerated as follows. Page 555. Through the factor of time in evolution. Through extra-systemic stimulation and intensive training, whether for a Logos or a man. Through the process of initiation and the application of the rods of initiation. The factor of evolution is recognized and studied by many schools of thought, esoteric or exoteric. The extra-systemic stimulation involves a large number of factors, but the main two to be remembered are that this stimulation will be applied through the group to the unit, through a more evolved kingdom of nature to a less evolved. As regards the third factor of initiation, it must be borne in mind that we are here considering only the great initiations and not the numerous expansions of consciousness which can be traced through all kingdoms and all manifestations. In connection with what we have considered above, anent the primary function of a thought form, the power to respond to vibration, I would emphasize the necessity of remembering that that response must be made by the inner embodied idea, and that it will then, through a complex reflex action, bring about response from the material sheath which veils it. Vibration is the result of subjective impulse and makes its appeal to the subjective consciousness through impact upon whatever may be understood as substance. This impact is transmitted direct to the inner life and in due turn is retransmitted to substance in the form of recognition or realization. An analogous process may be studied in the nerve reactions of the physical frame and their alliance with the brain consciousness. As will be seen in the three worlds of man's emprise, man will work as a creator and will follow a similar procedure. Page 556. His thought forms will be constructed of mental matter, chosen specifically because it vibrates to the same type of vibration as the idea seeking embodiment, and these forms will persist, as does the logoic thought form, the solar system, for just as long as the factor of will or dynamic vitality continues to hold it together. This brings us to our next point, B, to provide a body for an idea. In this statement we have latent the basic principle of incarnation and of activity, even of existence itself. It involves the expansion of our idea to include the cosmic mental plane, as we consider the Logos, and as the creative faculty of man is studied, we are taken to the mental plane of the solar system. One fundamental thought must here be given and pondered upon. This creative impulse, this tendency towards the concretion of the abstract, this inherent ability to take form, has its fullest expression as yet in physical matter. The raison d'être is that for man, all substances with which he creates, all forms which he builds, and all processes of concretion which he carries on, are created, built, and carried on within the physical body of the logos. Herein can be found the reason for the emphasis laid in nature on the sex aspect and on that of physical reproduction. It can be seen in all the kingdoms of nature, with the exception of the first and fifth. This is a most significant point, and the exceptions should be studied in their widest connotation, for they contain the basic mystery of sex on the involutionary path and on the evolutionary. In them we have the two extremes. It will have been noted that as the idea that the solar system is the physical vehicle of the logos and his body of manifestation is grasped, many problems become elucidated, and two points especially will gradually be apprehended by the student if he meditates and studies. First, that in due course of time, as the logos achieves liberation from the trammels of physical matter, the whole objective system will come to be regarded as an idea or concept clothed in a veil or sheath of subtler matter than the physical, and the logoic body will be viewed as the product of will and desire, and physical matter in any of its grades will not enter into its composition. It will simply be a desire body. Page 557. This will bring about a condition of affairs inconceivable to us, and only to be somewhat apprehended by the man who can function upon the systemic Buddhic plane, the fourth cosmic ether. Bear in mind here that our astral plane is but the sixth subplane of the cosmic physical plane, and that this provides us with no real grounds from which to reason concerning the cosmic astral plane. Only when the astral plane is a calm receiver of Buddhic impulse, or a liquid reflector of that plane, which will not be till the close of the Mahamanvantara, shall we be able to formulate any ideas anent the cosmic astral plane. Second, that the entire sex aspect of manifestation, as we understand it in the different kingdoms of nature, is an expression of the energy of the logos as it flows through and stimulates that center in his body which corresponds to the generative organs. All the creative functions of the vegetable, animal, and human family, viewing them as a whole, are as yet purely physical and based on lower desire. The desire of the logos for physical incarnation is as yet the dominant note. Later, his desire for that will be less and will become transmuted into desire for creation on mental levels only. This is what brings the destroyer aspect into activity, leading to eventual obscuration and the physical death of the solar system. Indication that this aspect is coming into power will be seen when two great events transpire. Page 558. A. The ability of man consciously to create on mental levels and the consequent transmutation of his lower sex impulses into higher. B. The mental vitalization of another large section of the animal kingdom. When these two things can be seen working out in any round, it will be indicative of a decided mental polarization of the logos. We can only become cognizant of this by studying his body of manifestation in its component parts. What is here predicated anent the logoic thought form can be equally well stated about that of a heavenly man and a planetary scheme. As his cosmic polarization becomes more mental, and as his cosmic desire nature becomes transmuted, the force that plays through his centers will correspondingly be seen to vary in direction. He will withdraw force from certain of his lower centers and globes. He will cease to be interested in physical incarnation, and he will eventually withdraw within himself. His thought form will show a gradual diminution of vitality. The dense physical globe will die and pass out of objectivity, and other globes will temporarily hold his life, though not for long. In due course of time, the entire scheme will be obscured, and he will function only in his cosmic astral body. Such is the case, too, with a chain and its informing life. viewing a chain as simply a center in the body of the planetary logos, yet having its own central factor. This can be seen in the moon in a most interesting way. The desire of its occupant was no longer for physical manifestation. He therefore withdrew his life. All that is left is the devitalized shell. The two other aspects have gone, and only the third aspect, the inherent life of matter itself, remains gradually to dissipate also as the centuries elapse. In connection with man, a similar condition is seen in the gradual disintegration of the physical body after death. The two other aspects are removed and the form decays. Page 559. As these fundamental facts are grasped and man begins to appreciate his position as creator, the entire aspect of the sex question will also change, and emphasis will be laid upon the laws of mental creation, on the formulation of thought forms in a scientific manner, and the dense physical aspect of creation will be in abeyance. When this is so, then will man be coming into his divine right, and the human kingdom be fulfilling its legitimate function. The sex aspect, as at present expressing itself, and the whole process of reproduction, is one which man shares with the animal kingdom, and is based upon his animal instincts and his dense physical nature, which is not a principle. When he is totally emancipated from the animal kingdom, and the third and fourth kingdoms stand distinct from each other, then the sex nature and the organs of reproduction will be viewed by the average man in a very different manner than at present. Creation will eventually be the result of thought impulses and not desire impulses. The process will be then, once the initial impulse on the mental plane has been given, as normal, as safe, and as unconscious as the act of breathing is now. When this is so, and the time is a long way ahead, physical reproduction will still continue, but the physical form will be spoken of in terms of concretion and of energy, and the emphasis will be laid upon that which is to be embodied. This stage will be entered upon when the functions of the etheric body are scientifically grasped and understood, and the laws of creative thought are a matter of public knowledge and discussion. It will coincide with a period wherein the animal kingdom will again be under monastic impression, and individualization will again be permitted. Page 560. It will be generally recognized at that time that spirit-matter are two aspects of the one unity, and the present terminology of spirit and material substance will have given place to the broader concept of negative and positive energy as the two aspects of the one energy. All phenomena will then be expressed in force terms, and the sex question, or the union of the male and female, the negative and the positive, on the physical plane, will be redeemed and purified. An embodied idea, therefore, is literally a positive impulse emanating from mental levels and clothing itself in a veil of negative substance. These two factors, in turn, will be regarded as emanations from a still greater force center, which is expressing purpose through them both. A thought form, as constructed by man, is the union of a positive emanation and a negative. These two are the emanations of a unity, the coherent thinker. C. To carry out specific purpose. We touch here upon the most vital element in the building of thought forms. In our first point, we touched upon the aspect of consciousness, or response to sensation or feeling, and thus brought into our study of the building process the second aspect logoic, that of the ego, or the realization of essential duality. In our second point, the more objective aspect was somewhat elaborated, and the tangible form dealt with, thus bringing in the third logoic aspect, that of intelligent substance, or that through which consciousness seeks expression. Now the will or purpose aspect is to be considered, bringing therefore the first aspect logoic, or the will to be, to the fore. When this third point is meditated upon with care, it will be noted, as might be expected, that it includes the other two and synthesizes them. Certain factors must be borne in mind as we consider these words, specific purpose. By their tabulation, we shall endeavor to make as clear as may be this very complex matter. page 561. The ideas involved are the factor of identity. Specific purpose is the practical application of the will or intent of a conscious, intelligent existence as it shows itself in A, its source, B, its mission, C, its method, D, its objective. All these will vary according to the nature of the emanating identity. All thought forms, logoic, planetary, and human, for no other entities of lesser grade work as mental creators, emanate from a mind, are built for the purpose of carrying out some active work, demonstrate under set rules and laws, and have a definite goal or expected consummation. The factor of time. Specific purpose in the solar system is the gradual evolution of a definite plan originating in the mind of the logos and slowly and cyclically achieving consummation. Three vast periods of time are consumed in the process. The period of construction, wherein the form is built. The period of utilization, wherein the form is occupied, vitalized by a central life, and employed. The period of dissolution, wherein the form is devitalized, destroyed, and dissipated. In the first stage, that which concerns the tangible, that which deals with objectivity, is the more emphasized and of supreme importance. In the second stage, the life within the form, or the subjective consciousness, comes gradually to the fore, and the quality, or the psyche, of the thought form becomes apparent. In the final stage, the thought form, having performed its mission, separates into its basic duality, and will or energy, which lies as a unity back of duality, ceases in intent. Page 562. The objective life, spiritual life where cosmic thought forms are concerned, manasic life when solar thought forms are constructed, and elemental life where human thought forms are built, withdraws and the form dissipates. In all these cases, it will be apparent that only in the study of the development of the quality of the thought form will its inherent purpose be revealed. Only as its emanative processes are comprehended will the nature of its mission become recognizable. This is true, fundamentally, of all forms. Whether relatively unimportant forms, such as those constructed by man at this time, are concerned, this can easily be discovered, and, to the trained clairvoyant, each form reveals, by its color, by its vibration, by its direction, by its keynote, the nature of the inner life, the quality of its vibration, and the nature of its goal. In the summation of all these points will the purpose reveal itself. The factor of karma. Every thought form comes under the law of karma through the effect it produces. At this stage in the history of the system, that vast transitional stage between dense physical life and existence in the logoic etheric body, it is not easy for us to differentiate between these thought forms, which are effects, and those which are causes. It should be remembered here that only cosmic and solar lords formulate thoughts. The lunar lords and all lesser intelligences do not do so. Therefore, the two above-mentioned groups come under karmic law. They only are self-conscious and therefore responsible. Where self-consciousness is not, there is no responsibility. Hence, animals are not held to be responsible, and though they suffer on the physical plane and in their physical vehicles, on the subtler planes they are freed from karma, for they have neither memory nor anticipation. They lack the correlating faculty, and as the spark of mind is missing, they are held free from the law of retribution, except where the physical body is concerned. Page 563. The reason for the suffering in the animal kingdom is hidden in the mystery of the sin of the mindless, and in that terrible period spoken of in the secret doctrine, which resulted in abortions and distortions of all kinds. Footnote, the sin of the mindless, see Secret Doctrine, Volume 2, 195 and 201. This sin has to do with the period of the separation of the sexes in the early third root race, the Lemurian. The same historical fact is hinted at also in the Bible in Genesis 6, 2 and 4. The sexes had already separated before the ray of divine reason had enlightened the dark region of their hitherto slumbering minds, and had sinned, that is to say, they had committed evil unconsciously by producing an effect which was unnatural. Return to text. Had this period not occurred, and this particular type of miscarriage of purpose not taken place, we should not have had the fearful karmic relationship which now exists between the third and the fourth kingdom. The effect of the life and persistence of a thought form, if maleficent and destructive, works out as evil karma. If beneficent, it works as good karma in the group in which the emanator has a place. This is what is meant by there being no karma attached to the working out of a good and altruistic deed. The factor of the lesser builders. Here a most interesting factor comes in upon which we shall enlarge later when considering the elementals. The specific purpose of a thought form is connected very closely with the type of deva essence of which it is constructed, and, in connection with man on the mental plane, with the type of elemental which he can control and send forth as the occupier or vitalizing agency of the thought form. Roughly speaking, a solar logos works only through the greater builders, the Manasaputras, in their various grades on the two higher planes of the solar system. Page 564. He works through them and sends them forth upon the mission of constructing and vitalizing the systemic thought form with a specific purpose in view. The planetary logoi work primarily through the builders of the next three planes, Atma, Buddhi, Manas, who construct and control the work of the planetary schemes. Men work through the builders of the lower mental planes and the astral plane, for the human thought forms are karma manasic. The physical plane builders are swept automatically into action by the force of the currents and energies set up in subtler matter by the great builders. The following tabulation may make this clear. Tabulation 4. The building entities. 1. Quality Atma, entity Logos, center head brain, personality grand heavenly man, kingdom seventh unity. 2 and 3. Quality Buddhi Manas, entity planetary Logos, center heart and throat, personality heavenly men, kingdom sixth and fifth duality. 4. Quality, mental, entity, man, center, solar plexus, base of spine, personality, man, kingdom, fourth, triplicity. 5. Quality, astral, entity, animal, center, generative organs, kingdom, third, duality. 6. Quality, etheric, entity, vegetable, center, spleen, kingdom, second, transitional. 7. Quality, dense, entity, mineral, center, none, kingdom, first, unity. If the table is carefully studied, it will be seen that the fivefold earlier enumeration concerns the most important kingdoms in nature, whilst the final two are peculiarly interesting in that the mineral kingdom can in no sense be considered a principle, but simply the densest point of concretion of the abstract, and that the vegetable kingdom has a peculiar place in the economy of the system as the transmitter of the vital pranic fluid. The vegetable kingdom is definitely a bridge between the conscious and the unconscious. Here I am using these words in their broadest and most general sense. Though it is known that the mineral kingdom has a consciousness of its own, yet sensation is more distinctly recognizable in the second kingdom, and the distinction between the consciousness of the mineral and that of the animal is so vast that their respective consciousnesses are basically unlike. Between these stands the vegetable kingdom, approximating more generally the animal consciousness than the mineral, and having a most esoteric relationship to the deva evolution. All these kingdoms of nature are forms of thought. All have body, vitality, quality, and purpose, and all are sent out by a greater life than their own upon a specific mission, They are sent forth by those who are self-conscious and are a blend of mind, spirit, and objective form. Only the self-conscious can create, and only they are capable of purpose, of coordination, of direction, and control. Page 565 was the tabulation. Page 566. Even though it may seem that much has been left unsaid, yet in due consideration of the above 4 points in connection with purpose in a thought form, much can be worked out by the student himself. In extending these ideas to a solar logos, many questions of interest arise which are profitable only in so far as they expand the concept and widen the horizon of the thinker. The logoic purpose is not yet comprehensible to man. It does not profit him to meditate thereon, yet in the formulation of ideas and their apprehension by thinkers may come the gradual dawning of a day of recognition and a subsequent cooperation with that divine purpose. Let us therefore formulate some of these questions, leaving the future to reveal the answer. 1. What may be the purpose of the present incarnation of the solar logos? 2. What is the purpose which may perhaps be working out in our own planetary scheme, and what is the basic plan of our planetary logos? 3. Wherein does it differ from other planetary schemes? 4. What is the purpose lying back of the relation existing between our Earth and Venus? 5. Is the purpose of the animal kingdom as a whole in any way to be ascertained? 6. What is the purpose back of the present root race evolution? Can we realize it? 7. What is the purpose behind the differing national forms? Page 567. Let us next bring the whole idea down to a more practical basis and formulate questions along the following lines. 1. In what type of matter do I usually formulate thoughts? 2. What is the psychic quality of my thought forms? 3. With what specific purpose do I use mental matter? 4. Do I work in mental matter consciously or unconsciously? 5. Do I vitalize my thought forms with a high or a low order of entity? 6. Do I study the laws of construction? 7. Do I realize the power of the will to vitalize? 8. Do I destroy thought forms when they have accomplished their purpose by a conscious act of the will? 9. Do I make forms which bring karmic effects, or do I build those which go to the good of the group? Many such thoughts will arise, and in the study of thought, man learns the laws of being. 2. The laws of thought. There are 3 great laws that we might term the fundamental laws of the cosmos, of that greater system recognized by all astronomers, of which we form a part, and 7 laws inherent in the solar system. These 7 we might consider secondary laws, though from the standpoint of humanity they appear as major ones. A. 3 cosmic laws. The first of the cosmic laws is the law of synthesis. It is almost impossible for those of us who have not the Buddhic faculty in any way developed to comprehend the scope of this law. It is the law that demonstrates the fact that all things, abstract and concrete, exist as one. It is the law governing the thought form of that one of the cosmic logoi in whose consciousness both our system and our greater center have a part. Page 568. It is a unit of his thought, a thought form in its entirety, a concrete whole, and not the differentiated process that we feel our evolving system to be. It is the sum total, the center and the periphery, and the circle of manifestation regarded as a unit. The second law is the law of attraction and repulsion. Fundamentally, the law describes the compelling force of attraction that holds our solar system to the Sirian, that holds our planets revolving around our central unit, the Sun, that holds the lesser systems of atomic and molecular matter circulating around a center in the planet, and that holds the matter of all physical plane bodies and that of the subtle bodies coordinated around their microcosmic center. End of side 1, cassette number 13, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 568. Continued on side two.
Side two, cassette number 13, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section two, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 568. The third law is the law of economy, and is the law which adjusts all that concerns the material and spiritual evolution of the cosmos to the best possible advantage and with the least expenditure of force. It makes perfect each atom of time and each eternal period, and carries all onward and upward and through with the least possible effort, with the proper adjustment of equilibrium, and with the necessary rate of rhythm. Unevenness of rhythm is really an illusion of time and does not exist in the cosmic center. We need to ponder on this, for it holds the secret of peace, and we need to grasp the significance of that word through, for it describes the next racial expansion of consciousness and has an occult meaning. In the nomenclature of these laws, much is lost, for it is well nigh impossible to resolve abstractions into the terms of speech and not lose the inner sense in the process. In these laws, we again have the threefold idea demonstrated, and the correspondence, as might be expected, holds good. Page 569. The law of synthesis, the will aspect, first aspect. The law of attraction, the love aspect, second aspect. The law of economy, the activity aspect, third aspect. B. Seven systemic laws. Subsidiary to the three major laws, we find the seven laws of our solar system. Again, we find the law of analogy elucidating, and the three becoming the seven as elsewhere in the logoic scheme. In each of these seven laws, we find an interesting correlation with the seven planes. They are, 1. The law of vibration, the basis of manifestation, starting on the first plane. This is the atomic law of the system, in the same sense that on each of our planes, the first subplane is the atomic plane. 2. The law of cohesion. On the second plane, cohesion is first apparent. It is the first molecular plane of the system and is the home of the monad. Divine coherency is demonstrated. 3. The law of disintegration. On the third plane comes the final casting off, the ultimate shedding of the sheaths of the fivefold Superman. A Chohan of the sixth initiation discards all the sheaths beneath the monadic vehicle, from the atmic to the physical. 4. The law of magnetic control holds sway paramountly on the Buddhic plane, and in the development of the control of this law lies hid the control of the personality by the monad via the egoic body. 5. The law of fixation demonstrates principally on the mental plane and has a close connection with Manas, the fifth principle. The mind controls and stabilizes, and coherency is the result. 6. The law of love is the law of the astral plane. It aims at the transmutation of the desire nature and links it up with the greater magnetism of the love aspect on the Buddhic plane. 7. The law of sacrifice and death is the controlling factor on the physical plane. The destruction of the form in order that the evolving life may progress is one of the fundamental methods in evolution. The intermediate law of karma. There is also an intermediate law which is the synthetic law of the system of Sirius, page 570. This law is called by the generic term the law of karma, and really predicates the effect the Assyrian system has on our solar system. Each of the two systems, as regards its internal economy, is independent in time and space, or, in other words, in manifestation. We have practically no effect on our parent system. The reflex action is so slight as to be negligible, but very definite effects are felt in our system through causes arising in Sirius. These causes, when experienced as effects, are called by us the law of karma, and at the beginning they started systemic karma, which, once in effect, constitutes that which is called karma in our occult and oriental literature. The Lipika lords of our system, the systemic lords of karma, are under the rule of a greater corresponding lord on Sirius. We have therefore 1. The three cosmic laws of synthesis, attraction, and economy. 2. The Sirian law of karma. 3. The seven laws of the solar system. As we have been told, our seven major vibrations are the vibrations of the lowest cosmic plane. There is our habitat. Our Logos himself, the heart of his system, is on the cosmic astral plane. He is polarized there. Just as the units of the fourth creative hierarchy, the human, are evolving through the use of physical bodies, but are polarized at this time in their astral vehicles, so we have seen that the objective solar system forms the physical body of the Logos, though his polarity is in his astral body. It is significant that in this greater Manvantara, the Logos is to take the fourth cosmic initiation. A hint which may enlighten lies in the correspondence which exists between this statement and the fourth root race development, and this the fourth or astral round. Page 571. Footnote: the present round, which is the fourth, is the one in which desire or response to contact and sensation is being brought to its fullest expression. In the next round, the fifth principle of mind or manas will reach fruition. Return to text. The system of the Sirian Logos is on the cosmic mental plane, and in a subtle way, incomprehensible to us, our Logos with his system forms a part of a still greater Logos. This does not involve loss of identity, though the matter is too abstruse to express more adequately. It is in this analogy that the basic idea can be found of all teaching given out about the grand heavenly man. The whole conception of these laws is bound up in this idea. We have the three laws of the cosmic higher planes holding in a synthesis of beauty the greater and the lesser system. Next, we have the great law of Sirius, the law of karma, on the third subplane of the cosmic mental plane, which law really controls our Logos and his actions in the same way as the ego, in due course of evolution, controls the human personality. We need to remember that under the law of correspondences, we shall have a relationship in the cosmos similar to that existing in the microcosm between the ego and the personality. The suggestion holds much that we might consider with benefit. We must not, however, carry the analogy too far. As we have not yet evolved to where we have planetary consciousness, still less systemic, how can we really expect even to conceive of the ABC of cosmic truth? Just broad hints, wide conceptions, and generalities are as yet possible. Of one thing we can be sure, and that is that identity ever remains. Let me explain by illustration. Each one of us, in due process of evolution, forms part of one of the heavenly men, who themselves form the seven centers in that greater heavenly man, the Logos. Page 572. Yet, though we are merged with the whole, we do not lose our identity, but forever remain separated units of consciousness, though one with all that lives or is. In like manner, our Logos loses not his identity, even though he forms part of the consciousness of the Logos of Sirius. In his turn, the Sirian Logos forms one of the seven grand heavenly men, who are the centers in the body of one of whom naught may be said. The laws and the planes. We might, while studying the seven laws of the solar system, take them plane by plane, showing certain things, three in all. 1. We might study their effect as they demonstrate on the path of involution. 2. As they manifest on the path of evolution or return. 3. We might also touch on the laws as they affect the human and deva organisms that evolve by means of them. As we do this, we shall gradually get a broad general idea of how this system of ours, the thought form of the Logos, was gradually built up, how it is controlled and held together, and how numerous and intricate are the interrelations. Certain fundamental hypotheses are assumed, which must form the background for all we would say. We must assume first that a builder or some creative mind is working to bring about an ordered production and is seeking to manifest through a demonstrable objective. The objective universe is but the product of some subjective mind. Next, we must posit that the material for the building of this universe lay ready to the hand of the builder, and that this material itself is the fruit of some previous system, all that is left of some past consummated product. Given, therefore, the builder and the material, we must next accede to the proposition that this builder proceeds with his building under some definite laws that guide his choice of material, that control the form that he erects, and that indicate to him the process to be followed in the consummating of his idea. Page 573. We must not forget that three great symbols stand in the mind of the Logos for each of his three systems, that the whole exists for him as a concrete thought form, for he is learning to manipulate the matter of the cosmic mental plane on concrete levels, in the same way that man is working on the laws of thought and on the building of thought forms. It is impossible to do more than sense the symbols of the systems past and present. Perhaps if we could visualize a swastika of 10 arms revolving at right angles of a radiant green color, all the 10 arms emanating from a central blazing sun, we might have some idea of the thought form that formed the basis of System 1, the activity system. The basic thought form for the second system embodies the green swastika of the first manifestation and adds to it concentric and interlaced circles in blue, in groups of three, linked by one large circle. Both symbols are, of course, in the higher dimensions. The symbol for the next system is unknown. After grasping and conceding these three basic ideas, we can now proceed to the working out of the laws of the system on the seven planes, remembering always that these seven laws hold good on the numerically corresponding subplane on each plane. Let me briefly illustrate. The fourth law, magnetic control, for instance, holds sway on the fourth subplane of each plane in the fourth round and in the fourth root ray especially. We shall then have the correspondence as follows. Fourth law, magnetic control. Fourth ray, harmony or beauty. Fourth plane, the buddhic. Page 574. Fourth subplane, buddhic magnetic control. Fourth round, dense physical magnetism controlling sex manifestation on the physical plane and inspired by astral desire, the reflection of the buddhic. Fourth root race, the Atlantean, in which the above qualities specially demonstrated. 1. The law of vibration. This is the law of the first plane, and it governs all the atomic subplanes of each plane. It marks the beginning of the work of the Logos, the first setting in motion of Mula Prakriti. On each plane, the vibration of the atomic subplane sets in motion the matter of that plane. It is the key measure. We might sum up the significance of this law in the words light or fire. It is the law of fire. It governs the transmutation of differentiated colors back to their synthesis. It controls the breaking up of the one into the seven and then the reabsorption back into the one. It is really the basic law of evolution, which necessitates involution. It is analogous to the first movement the Logos made to express himself through this solar system. He uttered the sound, a threefold sound, one sound for each of his three systems, and started a ripple on the ocean of space. The sound grows in volume as time progresses, and when it has reached its full volume, when it is fully completed, it forms one of the notes in the major cosmic chord. Each note has six subtones, which, with the first, make the seven. The law of vibration, therefore, comprises 18 lesser vibrations and three major, making the 21 of our three systems. 2 multiplied by 9 makes the necessary 18, which is the key number of our love system. 27 holds hid the mystery of the third system. On the path of involution, the seven great breaths, or sounds, drove to the atomic subplane of each plane, and there the basic vibration repeated in its own little world the method of logoic vibration, giving rise itself to six subsidiary breaths. Page 575. We get the same correspondence here as we did in the matter of the rays, for we shall find that the lines of vibration are 1, 2, 4, 6. Logically, this would be so, for involution is negative, receptive, and corresponds to the feminine pole, just as the abstract rays were 2, 4, 6. This truth requires meditation and an attempt to think abstractly. It is linked to the fact that the whole second system is receptive and feminine. It concerns the evolution of consciousness of the psyche. On the path of evolution, this law controls the positive aspect of the process. All is rhythm and movement, and when all that evolves on each plane attains the vibration of the atomic subplane, then the goal is reached. When, therefore, we have achieved the first main vibrations and have perfected vehicles for all evolutions, not merely the human, of fivefold atomic subplane matter, then we have completed the round of evolution for this system. In the coming system, we shall add the next two vibrations that complete the scale, and our logos will then have completed his building. The fourth creative hierarchy, that of the human monads, has to learn to vibrate positively, but the devas proceed along the line of least resistance. They remain negative, taking the line of acquiescence, of falling in with the law. Only the human monads, and only in the three worlds, follow the positive line, and by resistance, struggle, battle, and strife, learn the lesson of divine acquiescence. Yet, owing to the increase of friction through that very struggle, they progress with a relatively greater rapidity than the devas. They have need to do this, for they have lost ground to make up. The law of vibration is the law of progress, of movement, and of rotation. On the seventh or lowest plane, the vibration is slow, clogged, and lethargic from the standpoint of the first, and it is in learning to vibrate or to rotate more rapidly that we mount the path of return. Page 576. It involves, therefore, necessarily, the building in of finer matter into the vehicles, both deva and human. In this second system, on the five planes of human evolution, we have the five vehicles, physical, astral, mental, buddhic, and atmic, which have all to be purified, rarefied, intensified, and refined. In the two lowest, the physical and the astral, only matter of the five higher subplanes, of their respective planes, is to be found, for the two lowest subplanes are too low for deva or human bodies. They were dominated in the first system. The mental body is the first in which we find matter of all the subplanes. The aim of evolution for us is love dominated by intelligence, or intelligence dominated by love, for the interaction will be complete. The human race came into the chain at a point where it naturally took bodies of the fifth astral and physical subplanes, and we can see here an analogy to the coming into the fourth root race of the more advanced egos. 2. The law of cohesion. This is one of the branch laws of the cosmic law of attraction. It is interesting to notice how this law demonstrates in this love system in a threefold manner. On the plane of the monad, as the law of cohesion, the law of birth, if we might use that term, resulting in the appearance of the monads in their seven groups. Love, the source, and the monad of love, the result. On the plane of buddhi, as the law of magnetic control, it shows itself as the love-wisdom aspect, irradiating the ego and eventually gathering to itself the essence of all experience garnered via the ego through the personality lives and controlled throughout from the plane of buddhi. Magnetism and the capacity to show love are occultly synonymous. On the astral plane, as love demonstrating through the personality, page 577. All branches of the law of attraction demonstrating in this system show themselves as a force that ingathers, that tends to coherence, that results in adhesion and leads to absorption. All these terms are needed to give a general idea of the basic quality of this law. This law is one of the most important of the systemic laws, if it is permissible to differentiate at all. We might term it the law of coalescence. On the path of involution, it controls the primal gathering together of molecular matter beneath the atomic subplane. It is the basis of the attractive quality that sets in motion the molecules and draws them into the needed aggregations. It is the measure of the subplanes. The atomic subplane sets the rate of vibration. The law of cohesion might be said to fix the coloring of each plane. It is the same thing, in other words. We need always to remember, in discussing these abstract fundamentals, that words but dim the meaning and serve but as suggestions and not as elucidations. In manifestation, the cosmic law of attraction controls all these subsidiary laws, just as the law of synthesis governs pralaya and obscuration, and the law of economy deals with the general working out, along the line of least resistance, of the logoic scheme. During manifestation, we have most to do with the law of attraction, and it will be found, on study, that each subsidiary law is but a differentiation of that law. This second law of the system governs specially the second plane and the second subplane on each plane. It might be interesting to work this out and trace the underlying correspondence, bearing in mind always that all that can be done is to point out certain things and indicate lines of thought that may lead, if pursued, to illumination. Ray 2 and Law 2 are closely allied, and it is interesting to realize that it is on the second subplane of the monadic plane that the majority of the monads have their habitat. There are a few monads of power or will on the atomic subplane, but their numbers are not many, and they simply form a nucleus in evolutionary preparation for System 3, the power system. Page 578. The majority of the monads are on the second subplane, and they are the monads of love. On the third subplane can be found quite a number of the monads of activity, but numerically not as many as the monads of love. They are the failures of System 1. There is a direct channel, as we know, between the atomic subplane on each plane. This is more or less true of each subplane and its corresponding higher subplane numerically, and there is therefore a direct and quite expansive channel between the second subplane on all planes, enabling the monads of love to link up with peculiar facility with all their vehicles when composed of second subplane matter. After initiation, the causal body is found on the second subplane of the mental plane, and monadic control then commences. The monads of love return, after life in the three worlds and the attainment of the goal, to their originating second subplane, that being also the goal for the monads of activity, who have to develop the love aspect. In the five worlds of human evolution, both groups of monads have to control atomic and molecular matter as well, and this is done by the utilization to the full as may be possible in this second system, of the will or power aspect. The kingdom of God suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force, or by will or power. It is not will as we shall know it in the final system, but it is will as known in this system, and it has to be utilized to the uttermost by the evolving monad in his struggle to control each atomic subplane. The monads of power have a much greater struggle, and hence the fact so often apparent that people on what we term the power ray have so often a hard time and are so frequently unlovable. Page 579. They have to build in, on all the six planes, the love aspect, which is not prominent in their development. A hint has been given us as to the approximate figures governing the monads. 35,000,000,000 monads of love. 20,000,000,000 monads of activity. 5,000,000,000 monads of power, making a total of 60,000,000,000 human monads. The monads of power, though in manifestation, are as yet very rare in incarnation. They came in large numbers at the close of the moon chain and will come in again in full numerical strength in the last two rounds of the present chain. We might now briefly trace the correspondence in the second round and the second root race, showing how the law of cohesion was specially active at these periods. A condition of nebulosity, of a pronouncedly volatile condition, marked the first round and race.
Movement and the accompaniment of heat is their distinguishing quality, much as in System 1. But in the second round, and also in the second race, a definite cohesion is noticeable, and form is more clearly recognizable in outline. Cohesion is also plainly to be seen as the distinguishing feature of our present system, the second. It is the aim of all things to unite. Approximation, unification, a simultaneous attraction between two or more is ever to be seen as a governing principle, whether we look at the sex problem or whether it demonstrates in business organization, in scientific development, in manufacture, or in politics. Well might we say that the at-one-ment of the many separated is the keynote of our system. One more suggestion may be given. On the path of involution, this law governs the gathering together and the segregation of matter. On the evolutionary path, it controls the building of forms. Page 580. It has been stated that the matter of the lower subplane forms the basis of a new plane. Therefore, we have on the atomic subplane a point where merging takes place, which makes it a plane of synthesis, just as in the same way the first or logarithmic plane is the plane of synthesis for this system. There takes place the merging of evolution into an inconceivably higher state. 3. The law of disintegration. This is the law that governs the destruction of the form in order that the indwelling life may shine forth in fullness. It is another aspect of the law of cohesion, the reverse side, if one might so express it, and is just as much a part of the divine plan as that of attraction. It is one of the laws that ends with the solar system, for the great laws of attraction, cohesion, and love last on into that which is to come. The law of disintegration has its correspondence in cosmic law, but it is almost incomprehensible to us. The law of economy holds the key to this law. When the monad has circled through all disintegrating forms and has achieved the sixth initiation, it is resolved into its primal monadic source, and the five lesser sheaths are destroyed. Later on, the monads themselves are synthesized, not disintegrated. This law controls only from the third plane and ceases action in this particular fashion when the third plane is transcended. This law is one of the most difficult for the race to understand. Some of its workings, those on the path of evolution, can be seen and somewhat comprehended, but on the path of involution or of construction, the working out of the law is not so apparent to the superficial observer. On the path of involution, it controls the process of the breaking up of group souls. It governs the periods when the permanent triads are transferred from one form to another. It works through the great world cataclysms, and we need to remember that it governs not only the physical plane catastrophes, as we erroneously term them, but the corresponding cataclysms on the astral plane and the lower levels of the mental plane. Page 581. It governs physical plane disruptions, especially those affecting the mineral world. It controls the disintegration on the astral plane of thought forms. It dissolves the astral vehicle when left behind, and the mental likewise. The dissipation of the etheric double is the result of its working. Again, we can correlate this law with that of attraction, for the two interact upon each other. This law breaks up the forms, and the law of attraction draws back to primal sources the material of those forms, prior to rebuilding them anew. On the path of evolution, the effects of this law are well known, not only in the destruction of the discarded vehicles touched upon above, but in the breaking up of the forms in which great ideals are embodied,
the forms of political control, the forms in which nature itself evolves, apart from those in which individual consciousness manifests, the great religious thought forms, the philanthropic concepts, and all the forms which science, art, and religion take at any one particular time, all eventually break under the working of this law. Its workings are more apparent to the average human mind in its manifestations at this time on the physical plane. We can trace the connection between the atmic and the physical plane, demonstrating on the lower plane as the law of sacrifice and death, but its effect can be seen on all the five planes as well. It is the law that destroys the final sheath that separates the perfected jiva. It has not yet been fully brought out, for the law of correspondences has been little studied, nor is it readily apparent, that on the third subplane of each plane, this law works in a special manner, causing a very definite breaking up of something that is tending to separation. Page 582. Like all that works in the system, the process is slow. The work of disintegration begins on the third subplane and is finished on the second, when the law of disintegration comes under the influence of the law of cohesion, the disintegration having effected that which makes cohesion possible. We can see an illustration of this on the mental plane. The causal body of the average man is on the third subplane, and as a man becomes fit for the merging into the triad, that causal body has to be discarded and done away with. Under the law of sacrifice and death, the disintegration is begun on the third level and is consummated on the second, when the man merges with the triad, preparatory to the final merging with the monad. Another illustration of the same thing can be found on the physical plane. When a man has reached the point where he can sense and see the fourth ether, he is ready for the burning away of the etheric web, which has its location midway between the third and second subplane matter which composes his physical body. When this disintegration is effected, the man merges with his astral vehicle, establishing a consequent continuity of consciousness. This correspondence and this disintegration can be traced on each plane, till finally, on the atmic level, on its third subplane, comes the final disintegration, which results in a merging with the monadic consciousness. The third ray, that of adaptability or activity, has a close connection with this law. It is through activity, or the adaptation of matter to need, that the form comes into being. Through activity it is employed, and through that very adaptation it becomes a perfect form, and at the moment of perfection loses its usefulness. It crystallizes, breaks, and the evolving life escapes to find for itself new forms of greater capacity and adequacy. Page 583. It is so in the life of the reincarnating ego. It is so in the rounds and races of humanity. It is so in the solar system. It is so in all cosmic processes. In the third chain, the moon chain, we have an interesting related fact. On the moon chain, the point of attainment for the individual was the Arhat, or fourth initiation, the initiation which marks the final breaking with the three worlds and the disintegration of the egoic body. At the end of the third root race came the first of the great cataclysms that broke the race form and inaugurated a new one, for it was the first definitely human race as we now know it. The analogy will be found to hold good no matter from what angle the subject may be studied. In the third subrace, a correspondence can be traced, though it is not yet apparent to the circumscribed vision which characterizes most of us. Close proximity to an effect often veils a cause. 4. The law of magnetic control. Footnote. Note the correspondence that can be traced here. On the second plane, we have the law of cohesion, love. On the second plane of the manifesting triad, the law of magnetic control, love. Again, lower down on the second plane of the personality, the law of love. The accuracy of the analogy is quite interesting and provides room for speculation. return to text. This law is the basic law controlling the spiritual triad. Through this law, the force of evolution drives the ego to progress through the cycle of reincarnation back to union with his kind. Through separation, he finds himself and then, driven by the indwelling Buddhic or Christ principle, transcends himself and finds himself again in all selves. This law holds the evolving lower self in a coherent form. It controls the ego in the causal body in the same way that the logos controls the monad on the second plane.
It is the law of the Buddhic plane. The master is one who can function on the Buddhic levels and who has magnetic control in the three worlds. Page 584. The lower is always controlled from above, and the effect the Buddhic levels have on the three lower is paramount, though that is scarcely yet conceded by our thinkers. It is the law of love in the three worlds that holds all together and that draws all upward. It is the demonstration in the triad of the law of attraction. On the path of involution, this law works with the permanent atoms in the causal body. It is the Buddhic principle, and its relation with the lower permanent atom of the triad is the mainspring of the life of the ego. On the path of descent, it has much to do with the placing of the permanent atoms, but this matter is very abstruse, and the time has not yet come for further elucidation. At the third outpouring, in which the fourth kingdom, the human, was formed, it was this law of magnetic control that effected the juncture of astro-animal man and the descending monad, using the spark of mind as the method of at-one-ment. Again, we see how it works. The monadic plane, the Buddhic plane, and the astral plane are all three closely allied, and we find there the line of least resistance. Hence the facility with which the mystic contacts the Buddhic and even higher planes. The lines of least resistance in the three systems are System 1, physical, mental, and atmic. The atmic was the highest point of achievement in that system. 2, astral, Buddhic, and monadic. 3, mental, atmic, and logoic. Note the correspondence, therefore, to be seen between the fourth kingdom and the working of this, the fourth law. It is a vital moment in this fourth chain. As regards human evolution, this fourth law is of prime importance at this time. The aim of human endeavor is both to be controlled by this law and likewise to wield it in service. Page 585. It is the law whereby sex expression, as we know it, is transmuted and elevated. Sex is only the physical plane demonstration of the law of attraction. It is the working out of that law in the human kingdom and in all the lower kingdoms too. The love of all that breathes and the attraction that works out in service is the same thing as demonstrated in the triad. Sex expression, the coming together of two, becomes transmuted into the coming together of many for acts of service, which will give birth to new ideals and to a new race, the spiritual. Here I might point out a numerical fact that may be of interest in connection with the fourth hierarchy. This human hierarchy is the fourth, as we know, yet if we count the five hierarchies that have passed on, it is in reality the ninth. Nine is the number of initiation, the number of the adept, and of the man who functions in his Buddhic vehicle. The fourth ray also operates in close connection with the fourth law. It is the ray of harmony or beauty, harmony through control, that control entailing the knowledge of wisdom. It is the harmony of similarity. It is the equilibrizing of all through the realization of the laws of magnetism that produce the coordination of the many diverse into the one homogeneous. Magnetism governs the synthesis of the many aspects into a form of unity. This harmony is reached through the fifth plane, and the fifth ray of concrete knowledge acts as a step to the fourth, for many who work on the fifth ray pass eventually to the fourth. In this system, the fifth ray is of paramount importance in the development of all egos. Each must pass some time on it before definitely remaining on his monadic ray.
In many incarnations, much time is spent on the fifth subplane of each plane, which is governed principally by the fifth ray. All pass then on the fourth subplane, governed by the fourth ray, and in this particular period of the fourth round in the fourth chain, more time is spent on the fourth subplane by evolving egos than on any other. Page 586. Many come into incarnation directly onto this plane, and it is here that they begin to think harmoniously. The laws in the three worlds. We will now take up and briefly study the three most important laws affecting the evolving human being as he lives his life in the three worlds. These laws are 1. The law of fixation, 2. The law of love, 3. The law of sacrifice and death. These laws are all dominated and controlled eventually by the three higher laws in the system, the laws of magnetic control, of disintegration, and of cohesion. There is a direct connection between these seven laws and the seven rays or vibrations, and if we study the correspondence, we shall recognize the fact that the first law, that of vibration, is the controlling law of the six, demonstrating through the second law, that of cohesion, just as the solar logos is at this time manifesting himself through his second aspect in this, the second solar system. The first ray of will or power is the first aspect of the all-self, and in the third outpouring came down to the fifth plane along with the other monads. A subtle correspondence exists between the monads of will on the fifth plane, the fifth law, and the fifth ray. Page 587. The second ray, or the love-wisdom aspect, wields a control on the fourth and sixth planes and dominates the laws of cohesion and magnetic control and the astral law of love. There is a direct interlinking between the abstract rays and the laws of the planes where they specially control. The third ray, which is the activity aspect, controls the laws of disintegration and of death on the third and seventh planes. Therefore, it will be apparent to the careful student of the wisdom that 1. The power aspect, ray 1, planes 1 and 5, and the laws of fixation and vibration form one interlocking whole. 2. The love aspect, ray 2, planes 2, 4, 6, and the laws of cohesion, magnetic control, and of love form another unit. 3. The activity aspect, ray 3, planes 3 and 7, and the laws of disintegration, sacrifice, and death make still another group. It is logical for the first ray only to have control as yet on two planes, for the power aspect waits for another system in order to demonstrate in full development. Ray 2, the synthetic ray for our system, controls on three planes. It has the preponderance, for paramountly we are the monads of love, and love is our synthesis. Page 588. Ray 3, the dominant ray of the system, which is past, its synthetic ray controls on two planes, and on one that is little understood, for just as the physic body is not considered a principle, so there is a sphere of activity that is not included in our enumeration. It is past and gone. Some explanation of this lies hid in the occult words, the eighth sphere. In regard to the four minor rays of harmony, concrete science, devotion, and ceremonial order, their control exists in degrees on all the planes, but they have their particular emphasis in the evolution of the reincarnating ego in the three worlds at this time. These four rays control, in a subtle and peculiar manner, the four kingdoms of nature, mineral, vegetable, animal, and human, and at their merging into the three rays of aspect, the activity ray of the Mahachohan being the synthesis of the lower four in our planetary scheme, have a correspondence with the merging of man, the product of the three kingdoms and the fourth, into the superman kingdom, the spiritual. The fourth ray and the fourth kingdom form a point of harmony for the lower three, and all four then pass into the major or upper three. This is worthy of our serious thought, and the analogy of the fourth plane will also be apparent. For this system, the buddhic plane, the human kingdom, and the fourth ray of harmony or beauty or synthesis have a point of correspondence, just as the fourth root race is the one in which the synthesis is first observed, the door into the fifth kingdom of spirit being then opened. The fourth root race also developed the astral capacity that made contact with the fourth or buddhic level possible. In a subtle way, too, I use the word subtle for lack of a better, meaning a statement of actuality that seems an illusion, the three minor rays, concrete science, devotion, and ceremonial law, have each a connection with the three kingdoms of nature below the human, and with the three laws of the three lower worlds. Page 589. End of side 2, cassette number 13, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 589. Continued on cassette number 14.